Chapter 51 The Last Communion. Our Eucharist is spiritual communion with the one God. Mary Baker Eddy, 1908. The executive members were gathered in Boston on Saturday, June 13th, for their annual meeting on the day before Communion Sunday in the Mother Church. But in the Sentinel of that day was a bylaw amendment stating that, quote, there shall be no annual meetings of the executive members, end quote. On the same day, Mrs. Eddy's, quote, word to the wise, end quote, miscellany, page 139, appeared in the Boston Globe. Perhaps Augusta Stetson was the first to respond to this surprise. She wrote the leader immediately from the Hotel Touraine, stating in part, I have just read your message, quote, a word to the wise, end quote. I indeed rejoice and am unspeakably grateful that the impersonal idea through your teachings has brought us to this hour. Beloved, the, quote, purpose of your requests, end quote, has always been, quote, sacred, end quote. You have ever striven to turn us from the contemplation of finite personality to the worship of one God and the spiritual personality or divine individuality. It is interesting to note that the leader's messages are no longer sent to the members of the Christian Science Organization. Her word given on June 13th to my beloved brethren embraced all the world and was given to the world through the secular press. Her mission was to all mankind and was not to be limited to the organization that she had built up for its protection and promotion. The next day, June 14th, was Communion Sunday in the Mother Church. The students nearest the leader at Chestnut Hill were aware that she had been suffering for several days and was restless and unsettled. She called her mental workers to her again and again, directing their work, but still did not get relief. Adelaide Still recorded, then she turned to Laura Sargent and said, what is it, Laura? I have always suffered for what was wrong with my church. Laura could not answer her question, so Mrs. Eddy turned away, and we knew from her attitude that she was praying and working over it. A little later, when she called Adam Dickey to her study, she was lying on the lounge, still wrestling with a malicious attack of unusual severity. But she dictated to him a new bylaw for her church. Mr. Dickey took it to his room, transcribed it, and I returned with it immediately to her room and was overjoyed to find her seated at her desk, wreathed in smiles, and pursuing her regular work with her usual vigor. This was a new experience for a newcomer to the home, such as Mr. Dickey, but he learned later from Mr. Fry that a great many progressive steps for her church had been brought forth through the mother's sore travail. The new bylaw read, Communion Service, Section 16, now Article 18, Section 1. The Mother Church of Christ Scientist shall observe no more communion seasons. Mrs. Eddy kept the students in her home busy working metaphysically all of the time. Martha Wilcox said, there were many demonstrations we made and many that we did not make. But working metaphysically and talking metaphysics were not the same. The latter was not allowed. Mrs. Wilcox recorded, the members of her household were not supposed to talk or discuss Christian Science at the table or among themselves. We were to live Christian Science and not just talk the letter. This was one place in the world where the chatter about Christian Science was not heard. But Mrs. Eddy knew that this chatter was heard throughout the field, and on June 14th, she wrote to her directors, "Faith without works is the most subtle lie apparent. It satisfies the students with a lie. It gives them peace in error, and they never can be Christian Scientists without that faith which is known and proved by works. Words are often impositions, and faith without works is dead and plucked up by the roots. It is not faith, but a deceiving lie, lulling the conscience and preventing demonstration. A satisfied sinner is the most hardened sinner." A little later in the month, she made this assertion again in a take notice, Miscellany, page 351, in which she refused to endorse a Christian Scientist's book, which was philosophy in place of practice. The leader showed the new communion season bylaw to the students in her household before sending it to the directors, and it may have been Reverend Tomlinson who remonstrated with her, saying it was a mistake. This troubled Laura Sargent, and while Mrs. Eddy was out for her drive, Laura turned to mind and opened Message for 1902 to page 19. "Are earth's pleasures, its ties and its treasures, taken away from you? It is divine love that doeth it, and saith, quote, ye have need of all these things, end quote. A danger besets thy path. A spiritual behest in reversion awaits you." Laura showed this to the leader when she returned, and she in turn showed it to the objector, saying, quote, "There, see that," end quote. But she had yet to conciliate her church and the world to this radical step. Before doing that, however, she sent another new bylaw, which is now Article 31, Section 5, Manual, page 94, together with several bylaw amendments. One, which is now Article 13, Section 1, Manual, page 56, required none but officers to be present at annual meetings. Another was titled No Malpractice, and is presently Article 8, Section 8, Manual, page 42. But abolishing, quote, a material form of communion, end quote, was another message for all her children for all time to come. So, even though her letter of June 21st, Miscellany, page 140, was addressed to, quote, beloved Christian Scientists, it was sent to the Boston Globe. Everything the leader did has meaning for her followers. When she gave vital messages to Christian Scientists through the secular press, could this not symbolize that all her children on this planet are Christian Scientists, whether they know it or not, and that she is their mother in Israel, leading the way? Do not her actions correspond with Jesus' words, quote, "Other sheep I have that are not of this fold," end quote. Alfred Farlow gave a press statement that evening to the Boston Globe, quote, "Communion season is abolished," end quote. Miscellany, page 141, which appeared in the Globe of June 22nd. Judge Clifford P. Smith had moved to Boston from Iowa to replace William D. McCracken, both as the new first reader for the Mother Church and as a trustee of the Publishing Society. The new second reader was Mrs. Carol Hoyt Powers of Boston. The names of 16 lecturers were announced for the Board of Lectureship. For the year July 1, 1908, through June 30, 1909, as follows. Mrs. Mary Brookins, Honorable Clarence A. Buskirk, Clarence C. Eaton, Judge William G. Ewing, F. J. Fluno, Judge Septimus J. Hanna, Professor Herman S. Herring, Edward A. Kimball, Bliss Knapp, Frank H. Leonard, Reverend William P. McKenzie, William N. Miller, Mrs. Sue Harper Mims, Reverend Irving C. Tomlinson, Reverend Arthur R. Bosberg, Bicknell Young. Some of these lecturers attended the annual meeting in Boston on June 16th, and others were in distant places. In June, Mr. Kimball was lecturing in Geneva, Switzerland, and Bicknell Young was embarking upon another first for the Christian Science movement. Mr. Young had recently left our Pacific shores on the first round, the World Christian Science Lecture Tour. His first lecture in Australia was in Sydney on Sunday, June 21st, to an audience of 2,500. The following Monday, June 29th, he spoke again in Sydney to another audience of 2,500. Meanwhile, back at Chestnut Hill, the daily work was going on as usual. There was much talk about drought in Boston in the summer of 1908, and this could have been the time that Mrs. Eddy called Martha Wilcox to her study one hot, sultry day and said, "Now, Martha, you go upstairs and write out a treatment for rain. We need rain." Martha had barely seated herself when her number rang. She went quickly to Mrs. Eddy, who said, "Well, give me the treatment." Martha responded, "Mother, I did not have time to write it out." And Mrs. Eddy said, "Well, just tell it to me." Martha began, but hadn't gotten far, when the leader stopped her and said, "Now, Martha, come down from sailing around up there. It's rain we need. Let's have rain." Humbly and in tears, Mrs. Wilcox said, "Mother, I can't do it." The leader replied, "It took Calvin Fry and Laura a long time to do it, but you can see that it must be done, and learn somewhat of how to do it." Then she gave Martha a lesson on weather, which she wrote down as soon as she returned to her room. God does not make sultry weather. And if we through belief make sultry weather, we must unmake it. God governs the weather. He governs the elements. And there are no destructive winds or lightning. Love always looks out from the clouds. Beliefs about the weather are easier healed than sickness. Laura Sargent was regularly assigned the duty to work on the weather. And on June 26th, Laura opened her Bible at random to Genesis 2, verse 5, and showed it to Mrs. Eddy. According to Adelaide Still, Mrs. Eddy immediately took the work out of Laura's hands and wrote the following letter to her board of directors. Confidential. Beloved, have several Christian scientists who are best adapted to it take up the weather and know that, quote, God sendeth the rain upon the just and the unjust, end quote. Hence, the latter, it is raining. Continue this prayer till the result follows it. Let none know that will tell it what is being done. There was gossip and grumbling about the abolition of communion season. But there were also letters of appreciation, such as this one from a practitioner in Washington, D.C. Beloved leader, from the point of view of the practitioner, the wisdom of abolishing the communion seasons at the Mother Church is manifest. It has seldom occurred in my practice that I felt justified in leaving my local work to go to Boston. The bustle of a big crowd, even of our orderly members, is less conducive to spiritual communion with the one mind than, quote, the quiet sanctuary of earnest longings, end quote. Science and Health, page 5. Faithfully yours, William Holman Jennings. Another student welcomed another new bylaw in an interesting manner, as expressed in this letter of June 29th from Springfield, Massachusetts. Beloved leader, when I arose this morning, my first act was to open my Bible. Before me was the 21st chapter of 1 Chronicles. This I carefully studied until I realized somewhat the momentous lesson therein contained. Later in the day, I read in the Sentinel of June 27th the new bylaw under the caption, quote, numbering the people, end quote. This chapter in Chronicles brought to consciousness as never before a sense of your wonderful spiritual discernment, its insight and foresight, coupled with integrity of purpose and moral courage, culminating in implicit obedience to God. Then I thanked God that it was my privilege to be your follower, that a lifelong desire to know something not subject to chance or change was satisfied in your teachings, and that I could realize that the teachings and author must of necessity be inseparable in character. In deepest gratitude for unmeasured blessings flowing from your life work of love, I am sincerely yours, Guy S. Perkins. It is possible that the leader had envisioned leading her movement until the whole world was wakened and lifted out of its sinning sense. But after God spoke to her in March of 1907, she knew that that was not to be the case. She had never excluded the world, for she well knew her mission was to all mankind. But more and more in 1908, she was reaching out to include all. Near the end of June, there was a manifestation of the effectiveness of her life's work. A receptive thought saw in vision what the leader had so long envisioned and labored for. The eminent American author of, quote, The Battle Hymn of the Republic, end quote, Julia Ward Howe, had a vision which she was induced to give to the public. The following was published in the Boston Sunday American of June 28, 1908. One night recently, I experienced a sudden awakening. I had a vision of a new era, which is to dawn for mankind, and in which men and women are battling, equally, unitedly, for the uplifting and emancipation of the race from evil. I saw men and women of every clime, working like bees, to unwrap the evils of society, and to discover the whole web of vice and misery, and to apply the remedies and also to find the influences that should best counteract evil and its attending suffering. There seemed to be a new, wondrous, ever-permeating light, the glory of which I cannot attempt to put into human words, the light of the newborn hope and sympathy blazing. The source of this light was born of human endeavor, immortal purpose of countless thousands of men and women who were equally doing their part in the worldwide battle with evil, and whose energy was bended to tear the mask from error, crime, superstition, greed, and to discover and apply the remedy. I saw the men and the women standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder, a common, lofty, and indomitable purpose, lighting every face with a glory not of this earth. All were advancing with one end in view, one foe to trample, one everlasting good to gain. I saw them advancing like a mighty army, laden with the fruits of their research, their study, their endeavor, in this battle with the powers of darkness, and ready to tear vice from the earth, to strip away all of selfishness, of greed, of rapine. Then I seemed to see them stoop down to their fellows, and to lift them higher, higher, and yet higher. Men and women, a vast host, whom none could number, working unitedly, equally with superhuman energy, all for the extirpation of the blackness of vice and for the weal of the race. And then I saw the victory. All of evil was gone from the earth. Misery was blotted out. Mankind was emancipated and ready to march forward in a new era of human understanding, all-encompassing sympathy, and ever-present help. The era of perfect love, of peace, passing understanding. Julia Ward Howe may not have known what she saw in her vision, but serious students of Christian Science did. Already they had made a mighty advance, quote, with the fruits of their research, their study, their endeavor, end quote. All had healed the sick, and they were working to, quote, raise the dead, cleanse the lepers, cast out demons, end quote. The leader had taught, quote, men and women of every clime to discover the whole web of vice and misery and to apply the remedies, end quote. She had given them the little book from the hand of the angel, wherein they could, quote, find the influences that should best counteract evil and its attending suffering, end quote. Another had glimpsed the glorious reality of the fulfillment of Christian Science, whether she knew it or not. This glorious reality looks away from the crucifixion, to the resurrection, and to the glorified being of the ascension. A new paragraph was added to page 200 in the fourth revision of Science and Health in 1908. St. Paul said, quote, for I determined not to know anything among you, save Jesus Christ and Him crucified, end quote. 1 Corinthians 2, verse 2. Christian Science says, I am determined not to know anything among you, save Jesus Christ and Him glorified.